Angela Catterns on your wavelength.
Vega 953.
Ashley Hall back at 9 o'clock with the latest news. Coming up here on Breakfast, well, of course, we'll catch up with the fabulous Wendy Harmer. She'll tell us what's lined up on her show for after 9 o'clock this morning. But we're going to catch up with Debbie Kruger, who is a Sydney music lover and journalist who's written a fantastic book called Songwriters Speak, in which she interviews some of our most famous, legendary songwriters and tries to get to the bottom of the whole artistic process. And she'll be bringing with her one of our favourite songwriters in Australia, Glenn Shorrock. Some of the other people she's interviewed in the book, Richard Clapton and the boys from Mental as Anything. One of the great lines in Australian songwriting, in my opinion, if you leave me, can I come too? That's Mental as Anything on Vega 953. Well, Sydney journalist and music lover Debbie Kruger has published a fantastic collection of in-depth interviews with the songwriters who have left an indelible imprint on Australia's cultural landscape. Songwriters like Harry Vanda and George Young, Richard Clapton, Don Walker, Andrew Farris, Colin Hay, and Glenn Shorrock. And both Debbie Kruger and Glenn Shorrock join us here in the Breakfast Studio. Debbie, hi.
Good morning, Anne.
Glenn, hi.
Morning, how are you doing?
Very good. Lovely of you both to come in. Debbie, I was interested to read that you felt some kind of urgency to this project, wanting to talk to these writers about their craft, really, while they're still around.
Yeah, the real trigger, I'd had this idea for a while, and the real trigger was the death of Ted Mulry in 2001, and that was quite a big deal. Before he died, the music industry put on a huge two-night benefit concert for him, and it was during that time I thought, I'm not going to get to interview him ever about his songwriting, and he's a great songwriter. And then I thought back to people I would have loved to interview, such as Peter Allen and Mark Hunter and Paul Hewson from Dragon, Michael Hutchence. So I just thought, look, somebody's got to write a book about Australian songwriters. We've had plenty of books and documentaries about the history of Australian music from a performance and recording point of view. Someone has to talk to the songwriters. I was working with songwriters in a PR role I had at the time, so I just started.
Well, good on you. I think you just missed out.
4 years later?
Yeah, 4 years later. It was a big project. Unfortunately, you missed out on Slim Dusty, didn't you?
I got very, very close. I had made inroads, and I spoke to Joy McKean and said I'd really love to come and interview you both now, because Joy, his wife, is an equally brilliant songwriter and wrote some of his biggest hits, such as Lights on the Hill. And Joy said to me, look, I think you're too late, Debbie. I don't think you'll get to Slim. And sure enough, he actually passed away the following day. Mm. I spoke to Joy 3 months later, and it's such a beautiful interview. It's the opening chapter of the book. She is such a national treasure and a pioneer of Australian songwriting. So.
Yeah, well, that's right, a songwriter in her own right. Mm.
Yeah.
Glenn, reading your bit in the book there, I get the impression it was the Beatles that really opened your eyes to the potential of original songs. Is that the case?
Absolutely, yes. I took little notice of who, you know, there's a little, the names underneath the title of the song. I took little notice of those when I was growing up until the Beatles came along. And I thought they were the Everly Brothers when I first heard Please Please Me. Mm. And then I found out that it was this Liverpool band, and they wrote their own songs. And I went, wow, that's pretty radical. And, of course, they became such a huge force and a real landmark in our pop culture that we followed on. I wrote the Twilight's first song called I Don't Know Where the Wind Will Blow Me, which you'll never hear again. It was released locally in Adelaide in about 1964 and became a top 10 hit there. And then I wrote another one with Terry Britton called I'll Be Where You Are, and that was our second single there. And then Terry carried on writing, and I sort of dropped off the twig a bit because he was much better at it than I was, because I couldn't play any musical instrument, you see.
Yeah. But then when you went from the Twilights to Axiom and then to the Little River Band, of course, and we should really play the absolute all-time pearler of your songwriting career with Little River Band. Here it is.
All of it?
Well, don't you want to hear all of it? You're sick of it.
We'll fade it out, shall we?
You're on Vega 953. It's 14 to 9. If the
There it goes.
He's given us express permission to fade at that point. Cool Change by the Little River Band, sung by, I mean written by, well, and sung, but written by Glenn Shorrock, who joins me in the Breakfast Studio, along with Debbie Kruger, who's written a fantastic book called Songwriters Speak, Conversations about Creating Music. And she's basically conducted a whole series of interviews with songwriters, including Glenn. And so, Glenn, that song, was it a personal experience you were writing from there?
Yeah, that was
basically
a time.
You were over someone, and it was time to move on.
No, it was being part of Little River Band at that time. I'd
over the band.
Well, yeah, you do. You know, you get fed up with it after a while. I'd been on the road with them for about 6 or 7 years, and we were just about to go off on another tour, and I was just feeling, oh, here I go again.
Okay.
There's one thing in my life that's missing is the time I spend alone, and that all spilled out of being in about half an hour.
Wow.
I mean, I worked on it a bit after that, but the basic skeleton of the song came mm-hmm. out very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Shorrock, James has given us a call to talk to you. Hi, James.
Hi, Ange. Love you on FM.
Good on you. Thanks, matey.
Glenn, I have to say to you, the songline that Ange played this morning was Crosby, Stills and Nash.
Mm.
It was a terrific old song, and hearing Cool Change again, just, I have to say to you, you're everything they were and more.
Well, oh. we
love your work, mate. Always
thank you. Have. Thank you, James. We were very influenced by them. Which song did you play, Angela?
It was Woodstock, because do you
right.
know it was on this date back in 19, was it 65?
69.
69? Mm. Woodstock started, was on today.
Was it?
First day of Woodstock.
Okay. Now, a lot of, Bertel, Shorrock, Goebel, you know, the writers of LRB, BSG of LRB, were certainly very much influenced at the time by CSNY.
Yeah. Okay. Nice to hear from you, James.
Thanks,
James.
Thanks
for the call. See you later. Bye-bye now. And so, Glenn, unlike your fellow Little River Band mate, Graham Goebel, who has songs, it seems, come to him in perfect form, almost as if he's channeling them. Mm. Would you like songwriting to be like that for you?
Yeah, I think Graham... Graham's more perspiration than inspiration. He's certainly a lot of inspiration, but he works very hard at it. He wakes up in the morning and starts writing songs, or works on the songs that he wrote
yesterday,
or 6 months ago, or 6 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, he will keep honing his craft. Me, I have to wait for that ding to go on. And
so, what do you do in the meantime? Just kind of hang around.
Just hang around, go to movies. And
sounds like a very nice life. Debbie, was there a process common to all the songwriters that you interviewed, or did they all do it differently?
Some of them share similar processes mechanically in terms of actually picking up a guitar and coming up with chords or coming up with a lyrical idea. But they all have different ideas about how the songs come to them. And it's interesting you mentioned Graham, because he is quite different in the way he works too, Glenn. And I interview Graham in depth as well. And he has this belief, and it's one of the more unusual beliefs about where songs come from, but he believes in it so profoundly that you have to respect it, and that is that there is actually a spiritual realm that brings the songs, that sends the songs to him, that he has songwriting angels, and they either bring a song in its completion to him or solutions to songs. So yes, he does work very hard, he labours over his songs, but he actually believes they come to him from this realm.
Yeah.
And they do
bring... It's
very
cosmic, isn't it?
It is cosmic, and Graham's a bit cosmic, isn't he, Glenn?
Cosmic, yes, and comic sometimes, isn't he?
But I loved that. I loved, you know, Casey Chambers believes that the songs are in the atmosphere. They're in the room. She said that she will pick up a guitar one day determined to write a song, in the mood to write a song. And yet if there is no song in the room, she will not be able to write a song. Whereas other people like Deborah Conway or Graham Connors, for instance, say, oh, no, I don't believe. Or George Young from Vander & Young. I don't believe in all that psychobabble, they say. It's just a lot of hard work, and it comes from our own hearts and minds.
Yeah. You're on Vega Breakfast. It's about 5 minutes to nine. Angela Coutures is my name. Debbie Kruger is the author in the studio. She's written the book about the songwriters called Songwriters Speak, and the songwriter in the studio is Glenn Shorrock. It's lovely to have you both here. We were just talking during the song, during Cool Change, about Bruce Woodley. There's a chapter on Bruce Woodley of the Seekers in the book, and I didn't realise it was he who wrote I Am, You Are, We Are Australian.
Which is called I Am Australian, yes. Yes, and it's been such a big song for him in his career that it seems to have dwarfed everything else in his career. And yet Bruce Woodley had a fascinating musical and songwriting career.
He
before
wrote with
that.
Paul Simon.
He's one of the only songwriters, possibly the only songwriter in the entire world to co-write with Paul Simon. They wrote a great song together in the 60s called Red Rubber Ball, which was number one hit in America for The Circle, but which was also recorded by The Seekers. And he's written a lot of other great songs with people like Hans Poulsen. But he wrote this song, I Am Australian, and it sort of overtook his life. And although he continues to write to this day, he's never quite been able to move on from that song.
He must have made an absolute mozzer out of it.
Oh, yes. He's quite happy to exploit it, you know, wherever possible, and yet retaining his respect for the song. But he does, he's quite in awe of that song. And that's kind of charming when a songwriter is in awe of something that he's created. I just found with Bruce that that it was almost holding him back.
Really?
Because of his attachment to that song and wanting to explore further avenues for it. So we did go into that in quite detail in the interview.
Glenn, have you written the song that, you know, on that sort of keeps you going financially?
Cool Change is certainly my most successful song
so
financially.
Do you get sort of royalties every month or every year off a song like that?
Yes.
More so than Help Is On Its Way?
Yes, Help Is On Its Way. And all of them, you know, afford you a living. Well, not a living, really. I mean, you couldn't live off your royalty stream. Some people can. Depends on what style you live in, I guess. But
thankfully,
I was able to sell my songs to the Americans, and so they still play Cool Change and Help Is On Its Way a lot. And if you get played a lot in America, then yes, you've got a healthy royalty stream.
I'll bet you have, yeah.
But it does well in various places.
I mean, one example of somebody who could probably live off a royalty stream from performances is John Farrar, who is the man who wrote all the big hits for Olivia Newton-John, and he wrote You're the One That I Want from the Grease movie. Now, I reckon his beautiful 3-acre estate at Malibu is pretty much from that and hopelessly devoted to you. I mean, how many times has Grease been played?
Well,
it was on TV just Friday night.
I know. I just
and isn't it one of
myself.
Those films that no matter how many times you've seen it, you find yourself standing there or sitting there and watching it
singing
yet again.
Along.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
I won't take your time too much, but when young people ask me, you know, what should I do to be successful? I say write songs. That's the only way. And write good songs and write songs that mean something to you and translate your feelings to an audience, and they will look after you forever and ever. And they will.
Well, that's a lovely piece of advice.
Yeah, don't worry about Australian Idol. And don't worry about being a celebrity. If you want to be famous, go rob a bank.
But otherwise, write a nice song.
And otherwise, write a nice
song. From the heart.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, as somebody who...
Great advice.
I'm not a songwriter or a musician, and I'm so in awe of people. I've used that word a lot this morning. I'm so impressed by people who create music. I think they're magicians. And the reason I wanted to write this book was because these people deserve to be highlighted.
Yeah, I think it's fabulous that you have, Debbie. Debbie Kruger's book is called Songwriters Speech.
Speak.
Sorry, Songwriters Speak. Conversations about creating music. Who's the publisher?
Limelight Press.
And there's a fantastic CD, which doesn't come with the book. You have to buy that separately.
Yeah, Songwriters Speak, the double CD. And there's a website where you can find out all about both of them, and that's www.songwritersspeak.com.
Fantastic. Debbie Kruger, thank you for coming
in.
And Glenn Shorrock, an absolute delight and a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.